Imagine a world where your electric car isn't just a vehicle, but a powerful battery on wheels ready to support the grid, where your smart thermostat, even massive industrial factories, can actively, participate in balancing our energy system.
Right, working alongside those huge wind farms.
Exactly, working in harmony with giant offshore wind farms, providing stable, reliable power. This isn't science fiction, it's the very near future being built right now. Today, we're taking a deep dive into two European Union initiatives that are turning this vision into a tangible reality for grid operators like Energinet, Denmark's transmission system operator.
And our mission today is really to demystify two critical EU frameworks. There's the forthcoming Network Code on Demand Response, or NCDR, and the already established regulation on requirements for generators, known as RFG.
RFG, got it.
These might sound a bit abstract, legal documents perhaps, but you're about to discover how they are fundamentally reshaping the European electricity sector.
How so?
Well, accelerating decarbonization, driving decentralization, and pushing digitalization forward.
Okay, so we're going to show you their real-world impact, how they're enhancing grid flexibility, pushing automation, driving data-driven operations.
Exactly. By the end of this deep dive, you'll have, hopefully, a comprehensive understanding of how the future of energy is being forged, one regulation at a time.
Let's jump right in then. First up.
First up, let's get into the EU Network Code on Demand Response, the NCDR. This is an exciting one. It's brand new, an EU-wide framework specifically designed to unlock flexibility.
Flexibility from where?
From the demand side, so from potentially every home and business across all the member states.
Okay, interesting. So what's its status? Where is it in the process?
Right. So a joint draft was prepared by ENTAE, that's the group for transmission system operators like Energinet and the EU DSO entity representing the local distribution operators. That was submitted back in May 2024. Then ACR, the EU Agency for Energy Regulators, they reviewed it, amended it actually, and issued their recommendation in March 2025.
And now, where are we now? Mid-2025.
Right now, the European Commission is actively consulting stakeholders and, finalizing the text.
And once adopted, it's binding.
Yes, exactly. Once adopted, this isn't just guidance. It will be a directly binding EU regulation. No wiggle room.
Wow. And its core purpose again.
Its central aim is to formally integrate all those demand-side resources. Think everything from your EV charging, smart home batteries, heat pumps, and yes, even those huge industrial loads we mentioned, integrate them directly into Europe's power system.
That sounds genuinely groundbreaking. It's formalizing their role in electricity market.
Exactly. And making sure the procedures are harmonized across countries, consistency.
And here's the really interesting part, I think.
Yeah.
It mandates using market-based processes.
Yes, to select the most cost-efficient flexibility. It's all about dramatically enhancing system flexibility, improving how all these decentralized assets work together.
Interoperability.
Precisely. And smartly removing existing regulatory barriers that might have sort of stood in the way before.
Okay, so for Energinet in Denmark, what does this mean? Since it's a regulation.
It means it's directly applicable. They can't just opt out. Significant updates will be needed for Denmark's national grid codes, their market rules, even their day-to-day operational procedures.
So their market platforms, like the balancing market or the markets for ancillary services, those essential grid support systems.
Yeah, the quick response team keeping things stable.
Right. Those platforms will need a serious upgrade then to handle these new players.
Definitely. They'll need to accommodate new rights and roles for independent aggregators, other demand response service providers.
Making sure everyone gets fair access.
Exactly. Transparent and non-discriminatory access. I mean, for example, the code will likely say that you, as a consumer, must be able to offer your flexibility without needing permission from your energy supplier first.
That's a huge shift in power, isn't it?
It absolutely is. A really critical element is also the TSO-DSO coordination.
The transmission and distribution operators working together.
Yes. The code expects market-based ways to manage flexibility at the local distribution level.
Like dealing with local traffic jams on the grid, bottlenecks.
Exactly that. Managing local grid congestion. So Energinet, as the TSO, will need very close collaboration with the Danish DSOs.
How? What does that look like?
Well, establishing new procedures, maybe new agreements for sharing real-time system data, flexibility activation signals, basically setting up robust protocols so they don't trip over each other's feet.
Avoiding conflicting actions.
Right. And this includes standard ways to calculate baseline.
Baselines. You mean figuring out how much demand was actually changed, the negawatt thing?
Precisely. Mm-hmm. Measuring that negawatt accurately.
Okay. Mm. And underpinning all these changes.
Right.
What about the tech? Does it mean big IT upgrades?
Oh, yes. Interoperability and common digital languages are a huge focus for compliance. EnergyNet has to implement new standards for communication, metering, verification for all these demand response signals.
Which translates to upgrading their core systems.
It does. Upgrading IT systems, including their SCADA systems, the grid's central nervous system.
Right, the control center tech.
And also building new interfaces for aggregators. And, of course, cybersecurity and data privacy are paramount, with potentially thousands of new devices connecting.
Makes sense. So, yeah, EnergyNet has to get ready for mandatory updates across the board, market rules, connection terms, internal procedures, non-compliance.
Well, not really an option. It's a non-starter, effectively. A proper compliance program, gap analysis, action plan that's advisable.
Okay, that covers the regulatory side. But let's dig into the practical side, the tangible technical challenges, and maybe more importantly, the opportunities here.
Well, the sheer scale is a challenge. Managing potentially tens, maybe even hundreds of thousands of distributed energy assets that requires an incredibly robust IT infrastructure.
Just handling the data flow must be immense.
Exactly. High volumes of real-time consumption data, sending out precise control signals, then verifying the response actually happened. It's a significant technical feat.
I can only imagine the data tsunami. But that sounds like an opportunity too, doesn't it? To innovate.
Absolutely. EnergyNet can leverage modern cloud platforms, cutting-edge big data analytics, IoT integrations.
What about their existing data hub? Could that play a role?
It could indeed. Their central data hub, which already handles meter data pretty efficiently, could potentially be extended, become a hub for standardized demand response data. That could really make Denmark a leader in data-driven grid operations.
And the communication side, sending signals, getting responses back instantly, securely.
Critical. Implementing the NCDR means EnergyNet must ensure secure, lightning-fast communication channels. But the real challenge, I think, is achieving seamless interoperability across all the different technologies out there.
Your EV charger talking the same language as my smart thermostat.
Exactly. Getting them all to speak the same digital language reliably.
So is this a chance to develop truly standardized APIs and platforms? Make it easier for new tech to just plug and play?
Yes, precisely. And automating the dispatcher demand response is key. Integrating that directly into their control room operations.
Why automation? Can't they just call people?
Not really. Huh? Many demand response actions need to happen within seconds or minutes. Manual dispatch is just too slow, often impossible. So this aligns perfectly with EnergyNet's existing push for more automation anyway.
Okay. Now, you mentioned negawatts and baselines earlier. How do you actually know how much demand was reduced or shifted? That sounds tricky.
It is tricky. That's the baseline and verification challenge. The code is expected to set harmonized principles across the EU for determining how much negawatt that energy not consumed was actually delivered.
So EnergyNet needs some smart algorithms.
Sophisticated ones, yes. To calculate those baselines accurately and measure the actual response for potentially thousands of individual sites or aggregations.
So this isn't just about the tech working. It's about building rock-solid confidence that demand response is a reliable grid resource.
Exactly right. Developing robust baseline models and verification tools builds that essential confidence. And that encourages more participation. It also aligns neatly with EnergyNet's existing commitment to transparent, automated, data-driven verification, plugging right into their settlement systems.
And the coordination tools between TSO and DSO, you said that was critical.
It is, especially when DSOs are procuring local flexibility from resources deep in their own distribution networks. EnergyNet, the national TSO, needs clear visibility.
To avoid messing up the overall grid balance.
Precisely. Mechanisms to avoid conflicts. But this is also an incredible opportunity to learn from ongoing pilot projects, like some of the Nordic ones exploring local flexibility platforms.
So they could build something state-of-the-art.
They could. Potentially leveraging existing platforms like the International Grid Coordination Platform, maybe. Build something that could even become a blueprint for the rest of Europe. It's like choreographing a really complex dance between local needs and national stability.
Okay. And last piece on the technical side, cybersecurity. Thousands of new devices talking to the grid. That sounds like a hacker's dream.
It's a major concern, absolutely. Opening the system to so many devices significantly increases the potential cyber attack surface. Implementation must prioritize encrypted communications, robust authentication, ironclad safeguards.
And reliability. Demand response might be less predictable than a big power plant.
True. Ensuring reliability might require redundancy, maybe backup measures. But the result of tackling all this is that it pushes EnergyNet to significantly enhance its real-time monitoring and control capabilities, maybe even using AI down the line.
Aligning with that trend of smarter, self-healing grids.
Exactly. So in a nutshell, yes, substantial technical upgrades are needed. But the NZDR is also a real chance for EnergyNet to modernize its grid management through automation, cutting-edge data analytics, advanced coordination tools, turning compliance into a strategic advantage for agility and resilience.
Okay, great summary. Now let's shift focus slightly. What about the market level impacts? How does this change the electricity marketplace?
Fundamentally, I'd say, by mandating access for demand-side resources, it dramatically expands the pool of participants in the market.
More players means more competition.
Yes. Enhanced competition and liquidity across energy markets, frequency regulation markets, capacity markets, all of them.
It could mean lower balancing costs for EnergyNet. And maybe indirectly lower energy prices for us consumers. That's a tangible win.
That's the potential, precisely. And a truly transformative impact, I think, is the acceleration of local flexibility markets, right down at the distribution level.
Local markets.
Yes. This is really the dawn of the era of local flexibility markets in Europe, where DSOs can directly procure demand reductions to manage their local network constraints.
And we've seen pilots proving this works, haven't we? I think I read about one in the UK, EPEX Spot.
That's a great example. Integrated over 100,000 assets in less than a year, projecting hundreds of millions of pounds in deferred grid investments by 2028.
Wow. That's a huge win for using smart solutions instead of just building more poles and wires, these non-wires alternatives.
It's a potential game changer. And this increased value placed on flexibility creates powerful new investment signals.
For things like?
Controllable loads, batteries installed at homes or businesses, smarter energy management systems. The European Commission actually estimates that fully exploiting demand-side flexibility could save Europe up to 5 billion per year in distribution grid investments.
5 billion euros a year, just by avoiding building new copper.
Exactly. By reducing the need for new lines and transformers through smarter management.
So does this mean we'll see totally new market products emerge, designed for these fast-responding loads?
Very likely. Perhaps shorter duration products, maybe even real-time markets. And dynamic pricing will definitely be reinforced.
How does that help?
Well, as demand becomes more responsive to price signals, we could see a dampening of those really sharp, volatile price spikes and much better integration of renewables by encouraging consumption when there's lots of wind or solar power available.
Okay. And what about EnergyNet's own markets balancing, ancillary services? How do they adapt?
Their market rules will need updating to explicitly incorporate independent aggregation. This boosts the supply available in those ancillary service markets.
More supply usually means lower prices, right?
Potentially, yes. And it encourages innovation, too, like getting super fast frequency response from thousands of aggregated home appliances working together.
But wait, all this coordination, local markets, national markets, doesn't that add layers of complexity?
It certainly does. That coordination between local DSO actions and national TSO actions adds complexity, no doubt. It requires very careful market design, things like bid forwarding rules, priority rules to avoid inefficiencies or conflicts.
So it needs careful thought.
Very careful.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, the NZDR is about creating a far more inclusive and flexible market landscape for everyone involved, leading ultimately to a more resilient, cost-effective energy market, and importantly, engage consumers who are part of the solution.
Okay, let's connect this back to EnergyNet's big picture strategy. They talk a lot about digital transformation. How does this demand response code align with that?
It aligns perfectly. EnergyNet has clearly identified digitalization, automation, and flexibility as core strategic pillars. The NZDR directly supports this by providing a formal framework, a set of rules, to harness demand-side flexibility.
Using it as a key tool to handle all that variable renewable energy, like wind and solar.
Exactly. Balancing variable generation. This symbiosis, this partnership between flexible demand and renewable supply, is really at the heart of building a smart, carbon-neutral grid.
So instead of just managing supply, EnergyNet can actively use consumer demand, like absorbing excess wind power or shaving peaks.
Right, and this inherently requires a high degree of automation, as we discussed.
Because it needs to happen so fast.
Precisely. Implementing the NCDR will push EnergyNet to fully automate its interfaces with aggregators using advanced APIs for dispatching instructions, automated merit order selection based on price,
and integrating it right into the control room.
Yes. Seamlessly incorporating automated demand control into their main control room tools. This accelerates the modernization of their SCADA and energy management systems. Essentially, you, the consumer, become an active, automated participant in the grid's control system, driven by real-time data.
And speaking of data, all this new information flowing in from smart meters, EVs, thermostats, that must be gold for data-driven operations, right?
Absolute gold. The integration of demand response yields a wealth of new, granular data. EnergyNet will undoubtedly enhance its data analytics capabilities.
Oh, things like?
Forecasting flexibility availability, analyzing consumer behavior patterns, optimizing which resources to call upon and when. This could lead to incredibly sophisticated predictive control systems.
Aligning perfectly with that vision of a fully digital smart grid.
Exactly.
And it also seems like it takes innovation out of the lab, out of pilot projects, and makes it mainstream.
That's a great way to put it. The framework encourages new business models, new partnerships. It effectively institutionalizes successful pilot projects. Think of Danish ones like iFlex or the Nordic Norflix initiative. Gives them regulatory certainty and scale.
So EnergyNet's role might shift.
It may well evolve, perhaps more towards being a facilitator, nurturing an entire ecosystem of flexibility service providers.
And ultimately, this all ties back to the big climate goals, the decarbonization targets?
Directly. By making the electricity system significantly more efficient and resilient, the NCDR directly supports those aggressive climate targets. Plus, it empowers Danish consumers to actively participate in decarbonization efforts.
And potentially benefit financially, too.
So, yes, in short, the NCDR is a powerful catalyst for EnergyNet's digital transformation. It directly supports their grid modernization and decarbonization goals. It's really a win-win.
Okay, so how will this code specifically affect EnergyNet's current and future projects across the board?
Well, take renewable energy integration projects. It will impact them deeply. EnergyNet can now incorporate demand-side resources as a potential mitigation strategy right in their grid connection studies.
Meaning,
for instance, they might be able to defer expensive grid reinforcement, building bigger wires, by instead planning to use demand reductions during expected peak periods.
That's clever, using flexibility instead of just copper.
Exactly. Future renewable projects might even come bundled with demand response agreements right from the start.
Okay. And what about their ongoing smart grid development, pilot projects like Energy Lab Nordhaven in Copenhagen?
The NCDR provides that formal structure needed for scaling up these smart grid and local flexibility pilots. EnergyNet's control system upgrades will get clearer requirements for how to handle, say, local market results. And cross-border pilots can also expand significantly, now with a clear regulatory backbone supporting them.
And for existing demand-side flexibility programs already running.
This will standardize how they operate. It removes regulatory uncertainties that might have held them back, enabling them to grow dramatically in participation. EnergyNet might need to set up a formal pre-qualification process for flexibility providers, though.
To ensure quality and reliability.
Precisely.
And what about all the IT and data projects EnergyNet is always working on, with partners like Hitachi or Microsoft?
Their ongoing IT development, like their digital platform initiatives, will absolutely need to incorporate NCDR functionalities. They'll need new modules specifically for handling demand response data.
Yeah.
Future projects might even involve setting up a national flexibility registry.
And scalability must be key. Thinking about that UK example again.
Huge focus on scalability, yes. Learning from examples like the UK's success integrating over 100,000 assets relatively quickly.
Okay, and finally, for projects focused on customers, the green transition. Even charging V2G.
All those projects encouraging smart EV charging, vehicle-to-grid capabilities, smart heat pump control, aggregated home batteries, they will tie directly into the NCDR framework.
Providing clear market incentives for those flexible behaviors.
Exactly. Clear market signals and incentives for you, the consumer, to adopt and engage with these technologies. So yeah, the NCDR really acts as a unifying thread. It connects and amplifies many of EnergyNet's projects around renewables, smart grids, digital operations, ensuring they're future-proof and aligned with the broader EU system.
Okay, that's a comprehensive look at the NCDR. Let's pivot now to the second major initiative we wanted to explore, the EU Regulation on Requirements for Generators, or RFG. Now, this one's different. It's already fully enforced, correct?
Yes, that's right. This one is a foundational EU network code that's been operational for several years now, since 2016, actually. Commission Regulation 216631, if you want the number.
And what does it do?
It established harmonized technical standards for generators connecting to the grid. This applies to new power generating facilities, whether they're wind, solar, or conventional plants, above certain size thresholds. It's been effectively implemented in Denmark since around 2018 or 2019.
Okay, so what was the core purpose? Why was this regulation considered so vital back then?
Well, the key was ensuring that as Europe connects more diverse and distributed generation, especially that massive influx of renewables we've seen,
right,
that these new generators come with the necessary built-in capabilities to support grid stability and interoperability.
So they don't destabilize things.
Exactly. And it also creates a fair playing field for manufacturers. By having uniform technical requirements across Europe, it removes barriers, basically making sure new wind farms and solar installations are good, supportive grid citizens right from day one.
So what kind of specific capabilities does it actually mandate? What do these generators have to be able to do?
Key capabilities include things like frequency support, voltage support, fault ride-through capability.
Fault ride-through, what's that?
That's a generator's ability to stay connected and keep operating even during a brief power dip or disturbance on the grid.
All right.
Like a car not stalling when it hits a small bump in the road.
Got it. Keeps the system resilient. What else?
It also covers reactive power provision. You can think of this as the muscle of electricity that helps keep voltage levels steady.
Okay.
Plus requirements for remote control by the grid operator and specific protection settings. The regulation actually defines four classes of generators, type A up to type D, based on their size and grid impact.
And the bigger ones have tougher requirements.
Yes. Type D, your large wind farms, big conventional power plants, they have the most stringent requirements. So, in short, RFG is all about ensuring the technical performance of anything new connecting to the grid, maintaining system security as our generation mix rapidly shifts, and boosting the market for new generation technology by providing clear, common standards. This was really crucial given Europe's, you know, huge ambitions for installing wind and solar farms.
Makes sense. So how does EnergyNet actually ensure compliance with this, given it's been in force for a while?
Well, EnergyNet updated its own national technical regulations, things like their grid connection terms and conditions for generation facilities, by the mandated deadline, which was back in April 2019, to reflect the RFG requirements.
But it's not just a one-off task, right? It's ongoing.
Exactly. It's an ongoing compliance effort. Because the EU code itself, or related codes, can evolve over time.
So they're essentially the gatekeepers, responsible for making sure no new generator connects without rigorously meeting these EU standards.
Precisely. It involves a pretty comprehensive compliance process. Plant developers have to submit detailed evidence, technical studies, equipment certificates, test results, before EnergyNet grants the final approval to connect.
And if they don't comply?
Failure to comply can be a serious issue. It could potentially result in denial of connection or even being told to de-energize an already connected plant. EnergyNet actively polices these rules, making sure every new connection strengthens rather than stresses the grid.
And it's not just about when a plant first connects, is it? It's about its whole life.
No, you're right. It isn't just a one-time check. Generators must remain compliant throughout their entire operational lifetime. RFG introduces ongoing things like compliance testing, CT, compliance simulation, CS, and continuous compliance monitoring, CM.
Monitoring? How do they do that?
It means EnergyNet needs robust systems and logging capabilities. Things like disturbance recorders, data loggers installed directly on the generators themselves.
Collecting performance data.
Right. Collecting and analyzing performance data, often using tools like their central SCADA system or advanced grid sensors called PMUs, phaser measurement units.
PMUs.
Yeah, they're like high-speed sensors, giving a really detailed real-time snapshot of grid health and generator behavior.
And I suppose EnergyNet has to report on all this performance back to the EU regulators.
Yes, they may need to report compliance progress periodically. They also have to handle any requests for derogations exceptions very carefully, documenting all the decisions and maintaining transparency with Acer and NSOE. So, yeah, EnergyNet's role involves ensuring all connected generation meets these common EU standards, integrating them into national codes and daily operations, and having the necessary processes and digital tools for continuous compliance tracking. At this point, you could say EnergyNet is in a sort of steady compliance phase with RFG, making incremental improvements to what's already a pretty robust system.
Okay, let's really dive into the technical implementation side of RFG now. What have been the big impacts on the physical grid itself? What's changed?
Well, from a system operation perspective, RFG has effectively upgraded the inherent capabilities of Europe's entire new generation fleet. For instance, all new large wind farms must now have that fault ride-through FRT capability we talked about.
Preventing them from tripping offline during glitches.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which prevents small disturbances cascading into widespread outages. And even renewable generators must now provide automatic frequency response through something called droop control.
Which means they automatically adjust their output to help keep the grid frequency stable.
Precisely.
That sounds like a huge opportunity, doesn't it? More assets distributed all over the grid, automatically providing support, especially with so much variable renewable energy.
It is a huge help. It mitigates challenges like declining system inertia, the grid's natural resistance to frequency changes, and generally bolsters frequency stability. So yes, new wind farms are now actively contributing to keeping the grid stable.
What else did RFG mandate technically?
Things like active power set point control and automatic voltage regulation for the larger generators, type C and D. This meant EnergyNet had to upgrade its substation communication systems and its central dispatch software, those SCADAMEs, to seamlessly integrate these new controls and the data telemetry coming back.
So the opportunity there is better control, more visibility.
Significantly greater remote operability and observability of the grid, yes. EnergyNet can now, for example, send a signal to curtail wind farms during emergencies with known predictable ramp rates. That gives them much better control during grid crises.
And all this sophisticated control, these mandatory capabilities, they must require serious testing and simulation before a plant connects.
Absolutely. EnergyNet had to significantly bolster its simulation and testing infrastructure. They now require detailed power system simulation models from every new power plant models compatible with standard industry software like Digg Silent Power Factory or PSSE.
So it pushed their technical skills in modeling.
It definitely pushed their technical capacity in advanced modeling. But the benefit is clear. Having these high-fidelity models allows for much more accurate system studies before connection and proactive identification of potential stability issues. That strengthens the grid in this era of high renewables.
Okay, so RFG applied to new generators. What about existing ones that predated the rules? Were upgrades or retrofits needed there?
Well, EnergyNet certainly had to coordinate its own grid protection settings to make sure they didn't accidentally undermine the new capabilities the RFG generators brought online. They also likely considered, maybe even implemented, retrofitting certain critical existing generators to ensure a more consistent system response across the entire fleet, old and new.
And how does RFG handle the really new stuff, like large-scale batteries or hybrid power plants combining solar and storage?
That's a good question. The RFG framework has been quite smartly interpreted to apply to these new technologies too, like energy storage and hybrids. These technologies, being based on power electronics, are often inherently very flexible in how they can be controlled.
So RFG pushes them to use that flexibility for the grid's benefit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It pushes manufacturers to utilize this capability for grid support, for example, providing synthetic inertia from wind turbines.
Synthetic inertia, like artificial weight on the grid.
Right. Kind of, yeah. Modern power electronics can simulate that heaviness that traditional spinning generators provided, helping stabilize grid frequency, even without massive rotating machines. So this means EnergyNet gains a more dynamic, more controllable set of resources overall. In short, implementing RFG has effectively embedded advanced technical capabilities into the grid's very DNA. It significantly strengthened the grid and given EnergyNet more sophisticated tools to manage it, helping future-proof the system for that ongoing surge in renewables.
Right. Let's turn our attention now to the market-level impacts of RFG. It sounds very technical, but how does a technical regulation like this actually influence the energy market itself?
That's a great point. While RFG is primarily focused on technical standards, its indirect market impacts are actually quite profound.
How so?
Well, first, by harmonizing those connection standards across Europe, it effectively removed what we call non-tariff barriers in the electricity market.
Meaning developers face similar rules everywhere.
Exactly. Developers can invest knowing the technical expectations are broadly similar, whether they're building in Denmark, Germany, or Spain. This boosts cross-border investment and competition.
Which can indirectly lower the cost of renewable projects overall.
That's the idea, yes. It also ensures more confident cross-border power trading because everyone can trust the basic technical capability of the generation assets connected under these common rules.
So a level playing field helps the market, and presumably, A more stable grid, thanks to RFG, is also good for the market.
Absolutely foundational. RFG plays a critical role in keeping the grid stable, even as we add more and more intermittent renewables. This reduces the risk of blackouts or large-scale curtailments that would otherwise severely disrupt market operations. So it creates a much more robust market environment where participants can trust in the system's stability.
Okay. And does it help get more players involved in those ancillary services markets we talked about earlier, like frequency control?
It does, yes. While RFG doesn't directly mandate market participation, its technical requirements, like having frequency response and reactive power capabilities built in, significantly enlarge the pool of resources that can offer these ancillary services.
So wind farms and solar parks can now play in those markets.
They can, and they do. This leads to more competitive ancillary service markets, potentially lowering the prices for these essential grid services, which in turn lowers the overall cost of operating the grid.
So in a way, it's actually helping accelerate the integration of renewables and the market transition just by making sure the tech is ready.
Precisely. By removing technical barriers and ensuring new generators don't destabilize the system as their market share grows, it allows the market to accommodate higher shares of renewables much more efficiently, and often without needing as many extra costly stability fixes.
And you mentioned it shifts costs, making generators responsible for some stability.
Yes. It helps clarify cost allocation and investment signals. RFG effectively internalizes some grid stability costs directly into the generator project costs, for instance, requiring investment in fault-tolerant inverters from the start.
So the generator builder pays for that baseline grid support capability up front.
Exactly. It shifts who pays for what, making generators inherently responsible for providing a certain baseline level of grid support. So in short, RFG ensures a technically reliable foundation, a stable playing field on which energy markets can then thrive. It's a key enabler for a diverse, renewables-driven generation fleet that can participate effectively in markets without causing system failures, ultimately leading to a more efficient and integrated electricity market across Europe.
Okay, great. Now let's tie this one back into EnergyNet's overall digital transformation strategy as well. How does RFG, being such a technical, hardware-focused regulation, fit into that broader vision of digitalization and flexibility?
Well, it directly supports EnergyNet's vision by ensuring that new renewable generators, the key components of the green transition, come with those built-in grid support capabilities right out of the box.
Making the supply side inherently smarter and more capable.
Exactly. This reduces the need for constant manual intervention, and it beautifully complements the demand-side flexibility being unlocked by the NCDR we discussed earlier. One strengthens supply, the other leverages demand.
So does that mean automation and control are actually enhanced because these new generators are RFG compliant?
Yes, absolutely. RFG compliant generators can be seamlessly incorporated into EnergyNet's automated control schemes much more easily.
Allowing EnergyNet to send automated signals for things like curtailment or fast frequency response.
Right. This perfectly fits the digital transformation's automation theme. Renewables become an active, integrated part of automated grid defense and control systems, not just passive energy sources.
And all that technical data the generators have to provide for compliance performance parameters, simulation models, real-time output that must feed right into EnergyNet's data-driven operations, too.
Indeed it does. RFG compliance yields rich, granular data that directly feeds EnergyNet's push for data-driven operations. This data can contribute to building a high-fidelity digital twin of the grid.
A virtual copy for testing and simulation.
Exactly. For running simulations, but also for real-time monitoring of generator performance against expectations. This directly supports their goals of moving towards more predictive and preventive grid operation, spotting issues before they escalate.
And does having these EU-wide standards help with interoperability and innovation, maybe beyond Denmark's borders?
Yes, definitely. By aligning Denmark with EU-wide standards, RFG helps EnergyNet collaborate and innovate more easily with international partners. It makes sharing tools, knowledge, best practices much simpler.
So they can adopt good ideas from other TSOs?
They can. And they can also influence future updates to the EU codes themselves, playing an active role in shaping Europe's future grid based on their own operational experience.
And presumably they needed digital tools just to manage RFG compliance.
Oh, they absolutely did. Ensuring RFG compliance across hundreds of generators significantly pushed EnergyNet to develop or acquire sophisticated digital tools. Things like a comprehensive database of generator capabilities, which can then tie into automated dispatch decisions.
handling compliance through online portals and data streams.
Exactly. Using digital platforms for document submission, maybe using those PMU data streams for ongoing monitoring, that all aligns perfectly with their internal digitalization goals. So yes, RFG really underpins EnergyNet's strategic pillars, enabling the green transition, enhancing automation, and leveraging data. It ensures the core components of the grid, the generators themselves, are smart and capable, modernizing the supply side in harmony with those demand-side changes coming from the NCDR.
Okay, so finally on RFG, what are the implications for EnergyNet's actual projects? Current ones, future ones?
Well, for renewable integration and expansion projects, RFG is basically now business as usual. All ongoing and planned wind and solar projects in Denmark are built under the RFG regime. Project plans account for its requirements right from day one.
Like in the technical specs for those big offshore wind farm tenders.
Exactly. It's baked into the specifications. This actually simplifies the grid integration process for grid expansion projects because the capabilities are known and standardized. Even innovative projects, think floating wind or advanced solar plus storage solutions, they're all built on the backbone of these RFG standards.
And for projects focused on system stability, or R&D, does RFG help or hinder?
It definitely helps. It actually de-risks them quite significantly. EnergyNet's research projects looking into low inertia systems, like how to get that synthetic inertia from wind turbines, or even pioneering black start from wind farms.
Restarting the grid after a blackout using only renewables.
Right, a huge challenge. Those projects can leverage the built-in capabilities that RFG has already mandated in the generators. RFG essentially raises the baseline capability of the resources they're working with, making innovation potentially easier or faster.
And it ties into their grid digitalization and monitoring projects as well, using those PMUs you mentioned.
Absolutely. EnergyNet's efforts in wide area monitoring systems, WAMs, and dynamic stability assessment are directly tied to RFG. The PMUs observe how generators actually perform during grid events.
And they can compare that to what RFG says they should do.
Exactly. The known RFG performance expectations help identify any anomalies or underperformance. EnergyNet could, for instance, develop a sophisticated compliance monitoring dashboard showing plant status and any deviations in near real time.
What about cross-border projects, things like the Nordic balancing model?
Having uniformly RFG-compliant generators across borders makes cross-border assistance and power sharing far smoother and more reliable. Everyone knows what capabilities to expect. This enhanced reliability underpins larger projects like monitoring inertia across the entire European synchronous area, or coordinating frequency control actions between countries.
Okay. And what about integrating really new technologies, like those big power-to-X facilities that turn electricity into hydrogen or other fuels?
Future projects involving large-scale energy storage, power-to-X facilities, complex hybrid plants, they will all intersect with RFG requirements, ensuring even these new types of facilities are built to be grid-supportive. RFG has truly become part of the DNA of project development for pretty much any significant new facility connecting to the grid in Europe. So yeah, RFG is now business as usual in EnergyNet's projects. It ensures they align with that long-term vision of a stable, interoperable European grid. While the NCDR is about unleashing new flexibility from the demand side, RFG has been steadily fortifying and standardizing the supply side, making all new generation a powerful asset for the future grid.
Okay, so pulling this all together, what we've explored today really shows that the EU's network code on demand response and the regulation on requirements for generators are two incredibly powerful yet perfectly complementary initiatives.
Absolutely. One, the NCDR, is fundamentally empowering and integrating the demand side, making you, the consumer, a potential active grid asset.
Right.
And the other, RFG, is standardizing and securing the supply side, ensuring every new generator, particularly renewables, actively contributes to grid stability right from day one.
And for EnergyNet, it seems compliance isn't just about ticking boxes for legal duty. It's actually a direct accelerator for their whole digital transformation strategy.
That's a great way to see it. These regulations don't just set rules. They actively reinforce EnergyNet's strategic goals of maximizing grid flexibility, embracing automation, and really leveraging data-driven operations. By fully embracing them, EnergyNet isn't just following regulations.
But gaining new tools.
Exactly. Gaining powerful new mechanisms to ensure system stability, optimize their infrastructure investment, and genuinely lead Europe's green energy revolution.
So what does this all mean for you listening in?
It means the electricity system powering your life is rapidly becoming smarter, more flexible, and more resilient than ever before.
Yeah.
You're seeing firsthand how seemingly complex regulations translate into tangible technological advancements.
Into real-world economic impacts.
And ultimately into a greener energy future.
So here's a final thought to ponder. Consider this. As we empower both the demand side and the supply side of the energy system to become active, intelligent participants, what new, truly disruptive innovations might emerge from the seamless, continent-spanning orchestration of literally billions of smart devices with vast renewable energy farms?
Mm-hmm. What new possibilities open up?
What new roles might you, and perhaps your home or your business, play in this rapidly evolving energy landscape? The journey to a fully digital, decarbonized grid is really just beginning, and these regulations, NCDR and RFG, are laying the essential groundwork for possibilities we can probably barely even imagine today.